Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much for all the speakers. I really enjoyed that. I'm Valerie Hall. I'm Professor of Midwifery at the University of Brighton. My question is for Christine in particular. It was absolutely fascinating to see that the areas that came out of your research in terms of the research priorities that women themselves had identified. And I just wondered, from that list, how do you then deal with the ones that aren't chosen in terms of helping those people who've suggested them to feel that somehow they are going to be involved in the research agenda at some stage? And also, I guess for some people, some of those priorities might have been about experiences they've had that they really could do with more support in dealing with. So it's about, I guess, what do you do with the suggestions that you actually can't follow up in the research agenda as priority?
Yeah. I did have some... Is this working? Can you hear? I did have some concerns about your first question, because when we did a very small project in London previously, we actually followed up the project by working with some of the service users to develop funding proposals that reflected their priorities, and unfortunately none of them were funded. So there's a question of whether, talking earlier this morning about rhetoric and reality gap, I think the users that we worked with were very disappointed about that. And around the time that I did that project, I was working, doing a commission project for NHS London, where we were evaluating a novel approach to commissioning, which involved practitioners and users more, not just confined to maternity, in setting the agenda. And that project was actually pulled in the middle of the project that we were evaluating, and there were some very, very angry users around. So I was quite conscious of that. The Chief Scientist Office is very, very keen to get the report, and we're going to just try to make sure that it's circulated as widely as possible. We're certainly going to pick it up ourselves in developing research proposals and just try to make sure that it's highlighted as much as possible. And put on the agenda. Unfortunately, we can't do more than that. And as I said, I do have some concerns about that. In terms of the second point, although these were mainly parent and toddler groups, they hadn't necessarily spent much time talking to each other about their birth experiences. And it was not really something that we could influence whether they continued to do that. One group in particular, the very North Highland group, wanted us to give back their local report as quickly as possible because they were planning to march on the local commissioners with it. So they kind of formed a coherent group that would take action. We tried to involve consultant midwives, heads of midwifery, people from the health boards in the area working groups, so that they would be aware of the issues that were being raised and conscious of the fact that some of the points raised by the women had direct implications for service provision as well as for research. More than that, I don't think we can really do, except as researchers to try to pursue that agenda, and particularly, I think, to pull out the issue around why, when there is good evidence on some of the topics the women were raising, is it still not getting into practice? And what kind of research do we need to do, or what kind of information do we need to get out there to try to improve that situation, to analyse the problems and come up with solutions?
Thank you. Any more questions? Over here. Yes, Sally.
Thank you very much, all of you. It was a really interesting session. I'm Leslie Page, visiting professor at King's College London. I have a complicated life because I practice in Oxfordshire in a unit where we attend home and out-of-hospital births. Last year, attended a birth in a yurt in a field. I'm becoming increasingly concerned about the default option for women, which is giving birth in hospital with a 1 in 4 chance of having a cesarean section, and being aware of the risks of cesarean section, and being aware of the healthy outcomes of home birth. I think we have to change that default option. And I was particularly interested in, Joanne, your approach, a trust that's obviously helpful and supportive. And I'm just wondering if that can be replicated, because the issue, I think, is giving midwives experience in home birth. We can learn from books, from the internet, from videos, but actually being there is crucial. When I trained as a midwife, we lived with a community midwife. I saw home births in the beginning, and I had a mental image and always felt safe at a home birth. And I think having midwives with an experienced midwife is absolutely crucial. I work with midwives who are absolutely brilliant, and I would love to see them going out, working with others, or having people come to us. But I think, Joanne, you've provided a model which I think could be replicated, and I wonder what you think about that and what my colleagues think about it.
Yes, definitely. As our trust does with them, because we have team midwives that have earlys, lates, on-calls, night shifts, so any one of us at any time could be involved with a lovely home birth. And when we're booking, when we do our options, especially for low-risk women, we're actually saying to them, well, that the birth centre is your first port of call if you wanted the hospital birth, but have you thought about home births? And it's something we talk to them throughout the whole of their pregnancy. It's not just at booking, really. We keep it's sort of a trickle of how, you know, would you like this and have you thought of that? But yes, at any time, if anybody from other trusts would like to come and spend some time at our trust, you would be very facilitated. But yeah, has that answered your question? Oh, right, yes. Hopefully, we'd want that to happen anyway, because we started with our birth centre. We had the birth centre at Corber, so we opened the birth centre at Stepping Hill to improve our normal birth outcomes, and it's actually become very successful. We had 60 births alone in our birth centre at the Trust last month, so it is on the up a lot. And what we tend to do is, when we are seeing women at the birth centre, especially primips, we are saying that you've got the confidence, look how brilliantly you've done at the birth centre, why don't you not think about having a home birth next, because you've got the ability to have a natural normal home birth, and wouldn't it be great and wonderful to have one at home in your own environment. But yes, replicating it in other trusts. I'm hoping to actually present this into the practicing midwife, so that hopefully it will go out to any trust that wants to read it and wants to contact me. I'm willing to give anybody my email number to help that along. So,
thank you.
Any more questions? Oh. One here, two, three. One here, and then there's two and three in the middle of this middle section. Lady in the green top and the lady in the shirt.
Problem between rhetoric and reality. I've certainly had experience when I've recently gone back into practice, and I've extensive practice in out-of-hospital births, both birth centres and home births. I've gone to practice at a new unit part-time, and when I asked to go to community, because that's where all my experience is, then I was told, no, you need to have the labour ward experience first. It's never my intention to be a labour ward midwife. I don't think there is any commitment from management in some places for home births because of the increase in time and getting midwives out of the unit. And I think that's really a problem that we need to address at national level as well as with schemes like this. Really great presentation, so thank you.
Lady in the green sweater, yep.
Could Joanne tell us a bit more about her home birth supporter role, please?
Yes, we have midwifery assistants that work on the birth centre who are, maybe they started off as auxiliaries, as we knew them as auxiliaries, and they got extra training to improve their role, because there is such they're important people in the workplace. And because they are an attendant at the birth centre, we have three birth centre rooms. It means that they can then come out to us for home births for our extra help and support. As again, they do, they're involved in the mandatory training, shoulder dystocia, breech delivery. So they are there and present for that to help. So that's how we've brought it forward, and we feel well supported within our trust.
So you don't have second midwives?
We have second midwives as well. On the birth centre mainly, we have the midwifery assistants and assistant practitioners that that can be our second midwife, but we also obviously have the two midwives as a preference.
The lady about four rows behind. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda Kennett, Practice Development Midwife from Lanarkshire. Could I have a question for Joanne? It's just about, you talked about the 10% of midwives that had concerns regarding home birth. Could you just tell me how you maybe managed to influence negative feelings towards home birth from your midwife colleagues?
Sorry, is that how we change their perspective?
How do you change those negative feelings from those midwives? Because it can actually be quite difficult to motivate those midwives that, you know, have the negative feelings.
It is, but it was also hard to distinguish on who they were because it was anonymous. So we tend to, because of all the different shifts, we do know about people that want extra help and support. And through our supervisor of midwives, that's how we get the feedback that maybe they want that extra support. And it's all about explaining, you know, getting them back into the enthusiasm of normality. Because we shouldn't be looking at home births as what if. What if this goes? What if that? We should be looking at it to say, well, you know, it's a very positive thing. And we know from research that it does prevent intervention. So that's how we're bringing that across. And it's just through extra support and training and making sure that the people, that, especially newly qualified, feel that supported, that they do spend time as the second on-call midwife at home births. So they know that they have that support from somebody that has done it for longer and feels more confident.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.